I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your Sunday morning pop culture celebrity arts podcast.
Yeah.
On a Sunday morning, just before brunch.
Yes, and we like to talk about all the things you're going to be talking to your friends about at brunch. So we take what has happened in the media, in the news, in pop culture, in tech, in sometimes in politics, and we try to make sense of it for our lives and therefore yours.
Yes, except this week we're not doing pop culture, we're not doing tech, we're not doing anything sort of media related. We're going a little bit off course. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about habits, making and breaking habits. And I suppose there are touch points in habits and how they kind of fuel productivity.
Yeah.
Which does sit within our wheelhouse.
It does. I think every now and then it's nice to sit down and just kind of reflect and check in. And these are the conversations you would
That's
have with
so
your friends.
So cheesy. Reflect and check in with yourself.
No, it is. It's awful. I am just a buzzword now. I think it's really hard.
It's hard to talk about this without sounding really twee, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your health is the most important habit you can have. And like all the things that are true are so cheesy, but they're true and they're cliches for a reason.
Yeah, I guess it's because this kind of came up last week. Well, first of all, Sophie, who listens to this podcast, is a really big fan, said she enjoys when we talk about habits. The old school before brunch.
Well, it only takes one person to say that and we are
in.
We're in. We're doing
one suggestion and we're in. A compliment and we're yours. So we used to talk about this quite a little bit when we first started Before Brunch many, many, many moons ago. It was a little bit more about what was working for us, our recommendations and things like that. And I think it was interesting last week when you said that you felt like you were approaching burnout.
Yeah.
Because that's really something I felt over the last few weeks, like really chronically, getting quite worried that I was getting to the point where I would not be able to function. And I think there's been times before, certainly in my career, I used to get overwhelmed.
Yes, that's our key buzzword. Yeah. I would say to Cassie at work, how are you feeling, Cassie? And she would say, overwhelmed. And I knew it was serious.
Yeah. And I did a lot over the last couple of years to kind of move my career into a place where I certainly felt like I had more control. And for the first time in a very long time, I was certainly feeling that burnout and that overwhelm again.
Yeah. And I think burnout is a topic that really resonates with our age group, the age group that we did put a lot of pressure on ourselves. And the Gen Zers don't seem, from my experience, to suffer from the same sort of self-pressurized.
It's just not there.
It's not there to an extreme.
Like, where is it?
Whereas we came up in fear culture. You know, when we came out into the world, our parents, who are likely baby boomers, it was all about security and, you know, stability for them. It was just having a pensionable job for 25 years. Then they rebelled against that. And for us, it was all about being special and reaching your full potential and
following
your dream. And
but
to
still
the point where
trying
the pressure,
to attain all those things.
Yeah. And it was in this insane pressure of like, I have to reach my potential and I have to impress everyone, and still an element of, and I have to keep my job at all costs, and this fear of pissing people off. And, you know, we were very deferential as full-time employees when we worked together. And you know, I think there's a lot to be said for that hierarchical culture when it comes to productivity in a company.
Absolutely, it works.
Because now the Gen Zers are very, like, they have got boundaries.
Look, I think
it's to be admired.
It's...
Oh my God.
it is to be admired. Look, it totally is. And we're kind of in a safe space because our audience are certainly millennials. Like, there is no Gen Zer sitting down being like, let's go to brunch. So we're in a safe space here because our audience are that older Gen Zer and millennials. So we are like, there's no 18-year-olds coming to Before Brunch looking for their life advice.
No, we can safely say that,
which is fine because they're just, I don't understand them as a species.
They don't understand us. Like, I had this conversation with someone at work yesterday. The gap between me and my boss at the moment is so much smaller than the gap between me and my Gen Z direct reports.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about it before. They have these singular interests and they have a lack of sort of interest in shared experiences and commonalities and finding those commonalities and talking about, like, you know, current affairs or small talk. They don't have small talk.
They don't do small talk. It's all such niche little interests.
And they go on tangents in their niche. And if you don't know what they're talking about,
which I don't,
there sometimes isn't as much of an effort to pull you in. Like, it's like they don't really mind that you don't understand.
Yeah. We probably are sounding like old souls here being definitely, like, I just don't understand the youth.
Definitely. But they don't have, like, we all watched the same TV together. We all had a lot of shared experiences that they don't have because they have these singular personal device experiences.
Yeah, because they're always on their phones.
Always at the heads down in the phone.
Always. Always on the ticky-tacky.
Yeah.
But the boundaries that I see with Gen Zers in the workplace are interesting because there is not that willingness to stay later. There is not the burning oneself out, going well beyond the expectations of your contract to impress.
No.
They are very good at being like, this is what I'm here to do. This is a job. This is what I get paid to do. I will do this and I will leave.
I will leave.
And I will leave my laptop here.
We're producing this episode ourselves today.
We're bitter. There is a lot of, but which is good because like we're talking about, we have burnt out in situations before where we should have had boundaries and should have realized that it was just a job.
Yes.
And then I certainly got to that place in my life where I was like, this is just a job. This is fine. While still being very committed to a company.
Yeah.
Still wanting the best because I think we have that maybe that idea that if you work hard, you can achieve anything was instilled in us in our parents because they had that.
Yeah.
They worked. They got their mortgages. They got their houses.
Yeah.
And they got their pensions. And that is why we have believed this fictitious, you work hard, hard work pays off and you will succeed.
Yeah.
Ethos for our entire lives. But I think the reason that burnout is so prevalent across millennials now is because that has proven to be not true.
It's not true.
It's
only
not.
The other day I was on Twitter and there's an Irish business that's doing very well in the States and abroad. And their CEO is very visible. I'll tell you after, you know them very well. Mm. And they are very much hustle culture and all our hard work led to this. And this is what sweat, blood and tears does. And it's that old ethos that used to cause me so much pain because if things weren't happening, it was I'm not working hard enough.
Yeah.
And it's really not true. And when I look at the successes I've had in my life and moments where things have gone my way, and here's where I sound really twee. It was moments where my health was at its optimum,
best, yeah,
that I was feeling focused. There's no point in me trying to compete with this, you know, unicorn CEO when I've got food addictions, brain fog, can't get up in the morning.
Yeah.
You're starting from a different starting block.
Yeah.
And that has really helped me in the last 2 years is to take it right back to basics and make sure that you've got visceral happiness and like that you are feeding your body correctly, that you're getting up at the right time in the morning and feeling like you're able to get up. It's very basic, but it's something that's so in our control and you can start to measure positive results. And I, like, my acupuncturist said to me before I started the job that I'm in currently, like, no matter what happens during the day, do not let it into your body. Like, think it, do not feel it. And those are the burnout moments that are the most dangerous, when your body takes it on and your stomach is twisted and your shoulders are up and that's the burnout that's so deeply unhealthy and leads to probably chronic illness.
Yeah.
It's when you take it on in your body. So for me, the biggest key has been separate your body from your mind, from your working day, and make sure you can think these things. And I can think, oh, maybe Cassie's not happy with me right now, maybe I didn't get back quick enough. don't take that on in your body. Yeah. And don't go and have a stress burger or a stress drink that night. Keep your focus on your nutrition. And you're like, I know I sound really preachy.
No, but I think it's right. Like I, for me, the big switch that I had to make was giving up alcohol. And this is something that I've done for periods of time.
I just realized I brought you a bottle of Prosecco today.
I know, but I'll bring it home.
Oh, sorry. It's the thought that counts.
But also it's like, so the way that I talk about giving up alcohol, it's not a alcohol dependence. And I want to be quite clear about that because I think that there is real, I think it's a real shame that there's real stigma about giving up drink, that you can't just say, no, I don't fancy a drink. And it's interesting because when you speak to people about alcohol, everyone will often share the same thing. For me, when I drank, I had a great time, loved it. I'm not talking about binge drinking or drinking excessively, maybe like 2, 3, 4 drinks or whatever out with friends at the weekend, very normal situations. I would feel great when I'm drinking. Mm-hmm. Loved it. And that's what alcohol does. It gives you that little rush, increases dopamine, you're feeling delighted. The next day, without fail, my 32-year-old body would be hungover. And for me, a hangover is vomiting, it's splitting headaches, it's whatever. But you get over that and you can eat a McDonald's at 3 o'clock or whatever else, right? The major thing for me in alcohol that I realized was that it was really depleting my serotonin during the week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd be really, really down. Like we all joke, booze blues and stuff. But I was like, I'm really finding my productivity suffers, my motivation suffers, my general outlook suffers. And then it would start to pick up on a Wednesday, and a Thursday I'd be feeling great again. And then by Friday, I'd be like, oh, I'd love to go for a drink. And it was just this cyclical kind of, my weeks were just looking the same because it was, you know, you ended the week with celebrating with alcohol or, you know, commiserating with alcohol or unwinding with alcohol.
Yeah.
And then the start of the following week would be starting from this really low ebb of, well, I just need to get myself back up to where I usually am on a Wednesday. So I made a kind of, well, I actually made the decision to stop drinking after one particularly bad hangover when I like lost a Sunday and I was like, this just isn't worth it for me anymore. I really value my weekends, so I really need to make them work for me. And I have found this time round, particularly from Christmas to about, I did for about 4 months from Christmas to April. I had a hen party in March and that was it. And it was great. It was absolutely brilliant. But I find the time that I don't drink, my energy is so improved. Mm-hmm. My general mental health is so improved.
Yeah.
And like that baseline anxiety that everyone seems to exist with is gone.
Yeah.
It's just gone for me. And I can now separate what I used to think was chronic anxiety was the effects of alcohol leaving my body slowly over a couple of days. And now while I have like normal stresses, probably not normal stresses because we're trying to fundraise for a startup. So that's not a normal level of stress. That is
intense
hyper stress.
Yeah.
But it's
circumstantial. That's okay.
But it's doable. It's achievable. Yeah. Like I have a decent outlook. Like I have a normal, predictable outlook. And it's very much like this is stressful, but here are these tangible steps to get me out of this situation. Whereas for a long time, when you're in that kind of cyclical process of being very stressed, being burnt out, overworking, and then drinking at the end of the week, often that anxiety manifests illogically.
Yeah.
And you think, there is no out of this. There is no way. This is going to be my life forever. And, you know, I'm just really unhappy. And then I think that's when it starts to cause real problems. So I've really noticed that, like, giving up, I think what I've noticed about giving up the alcohol is how quickly you can train your mind to not need things. And this is where the habit piece comes into. So for like, say, for example, usually if I was going to a social event and I went to one two, three weeks ago, that was like a kind of corporate event that we were invited to with a tech platform. And usually in that scenario, I'd walk in, I'd feel really anxious and I'd reach for the first glass per second and be like, it's just to take the edge off. And you'd be like, alcohol takes the edge off. And that's the teaching in your mind. That's what your mind wants you to believe, is that, yes, you get that little bit of dopamine. Alcohol helps you relax.
Yeah.
And that for me is, okay, it's true, obviously, like it is true in certain situations, but the other thing that helps me relax is just time. So yeah. if I just stay in the room, relax, breathe, I will get to the same point that that first glass
you do.
lets me get to. Yeah, you yeah. just relax into the scenario and you're like, this isn't half bad.
You by osmosis, you reach the same level that other people are at. It's really weird.
Yeah, you do.
If they're giddy, you'll get the same giddy.
And like this particular event was sitting down with total strangers. Oh my God, they did this awful thing where they had play. You go with people you know and then they make you sit near new people.
My living nightmare.
Nightmare. And I saw it and I was like, here are people I do not know.
Yeah.
That I probably should know. Across from me is a man whose email I haven't responded to. Ugh. And I'm like, fuck, I really like you. I'm just really bad at emails.
Yeah.
And then over here are people I know who I feel like are having better fun. So, you know, you're like, this is awful. Yeah. But you relax into it. And I had a great night. I had an absolutely brilliant night. And I loved chatting to the people that I'd never met before. Because just time helps you relax.
But it's those little insights or one phrase that can really change the way you approach a new behavior that like take the time to find what resonates with you, because I think there's no point in trying to give something up through willpower alone.
Yeah.
That was the old approach. I certainly tried it so many times over the years with like sugar, alcohol, everything under the sun. It was just willpower, just 7 days cold turkey, not doing it without finding the what, like the why for me or the insight that really helps me. And with alcohol, I've totally changed my relationship with it in the last 2 years since the pandemic. And one of the books that really helped me get to where I am now is called This Naked Mind. And I learned that I really need to know the science behind what actually happens in your body to have a visceral response to like, oh, I don't want that in my body. But there were some really good insights like that when you sit down and think about it. One of her key points is, like your drink, the absolute best part of having a few glasses of wine is the first sip and the first 20 minutes when you start to get a buzz. And then it actually just goes downhill from there.
Yeah.
It's not enjoyable anymore. You start to get tired. You start to say stupid things. You're actually only, you're enjoying that 20 minutes, and that's the 20 minutes that we spend the rest of the night chasing. We want that buzz again, and it's just an endless cycle of chasing. And it's the root issue. These habits are the root cause of so many other problems in your life and blockages in your life, that when you pull that root out, that one thing that's holding your problems in place that you're clinging to, one win always leads to so many other wins.
Exactly.
So for me to change my behavior about alcohol, because maybe this might help someone else who's trying to change it, I changed my focus from enjoying my nighttime movie, wine, getting tipsy, and started to plan my weekend mornings more as the thing that I was going to enjoy. So focusing on what I was going to do on Saturday morning and what I was going to do on Sunday morning rather than Friday night and Saturday
living
night.
For the nighttime. Yeah.
And that was a really simple, it might not work for everyone, it really impacted me to say, I'm actually really looking forward to doing yoga on the balcony on Saturday. I know that sounds really annoying, I don't do that. But like that, I did once.
Like, I love my yoga in the morning.
On the balcony. I did it once. And I got through the week from focusing on that as my point of that's the crux of the week rather than the Friday night wine, you know.
That's a really, really good tip. I think that's definitely something that I start to do, even because I kind of eliminate myself from thinking about alcohol now. I would go, the other weekend we went out, a friend had won free cocktails at a bar, and I went out, and when I said, can I have a non-alcoholic cocktail, the barman designed me a non-alcoholic cocktail and then put it on the menu and named it after me.
Oh, I saw that on Instagram.
Cute. Yeah. It was so cute.
What's like, it called? The Cassie?
The Spicy Cassie.
The Spicy Cassie.
It's in all my friends' pub and on Mead Street or Francis Street. Mead Street.
That feeds into my theory that magical things happen when you don't drink. Like, good things happen when you don't drink. It's always been the way for me.
For me, it's just not worth the hangover, and it's not worth the sadness during the week. And it is a sadness. It's a real, like, it's a real depletion of serotonin. It's just not worth it. And it's not worth the depletion in energy. So the magical things that happen are just, I have more energy. I find that I go to the gym. One good habit often leads to another.
A good habit begets a good habit.
What's your starter habit if you ever kind of go through a, like if ever I go through a period of like being, you know, say I have had a couple of drinks or, you know, you've been on holidays or whatever and you're out of routine.
Yeah.
Like my first step, first good habit is you just have to start drinking more water.
Oh, that's good because it's easy and it's achievable. Yeah. I don't like drinking water because my body doesn't do water very well. Like,
okay.
I feel like it doesn't absorb into my cells or something. Just like goes into my stomach and then
straight back out.
Just constantly running to the bathroom. Not water for me. Like my starter, it's probably a removal rather than a starter habit. But my mentality is stop dead at a really shocking time.
Yeah.
So if I'm having a really bad cycle of alcohol, crap food, scrolling on my phone and it's spiraling, don't stop at an easy moment like a Sunday morning and you're going to stop on Monday morning, or one more meal and then I'm going to stop. I'll stop like mid-meal. I will stop dead. And I say out loud, I am stopping dead. And I will not do it. Like, just shock yourself into it. And it's a real like, whoa. And then that's it. Just stop dead. And I'll say to my sister, like, stop dead. And I'll put what I'm eating down and I'm done. I've stopped.
Very good.
But yeah, and like alcohol is the root of every bad habit I have, I think. Because you have your drinks, you get tired, you eat crap, your sleep goes downhill, spiral, spiral, spiral. Yeah. Your work is less productive. Like back in the pandemic, I thought, as I said to you, that I was burnt out and that I had a lack of motivation and that there was something wrong with me and that I was lazy. And I had, then not only do you have the fatigue and the brain fog and the burnout feelings, but you've got this layer of guilt on top of that.
Yeah.
Of like, why me? Why am I not doing enough at work? Why am I? And when I really stepped back and started looking at, like, again, I had to find the insight that resonated with me in order to make the change. I started looking at food energetics and Chinese theory around food really resonates with me. So whether it's true scientifically or not, I don't care. It leads to better behaviors for me. I just started pulling things out of my diet and for so it just wasn't hard to do that anymore because I had studied the body, how the body's reacting. My new approach is slow is real. So do things slowly. And that applies to work as well, because I realized when I break down my thought processes and what leads to stress, if I'm approaching a complex task at work, I go into avoidance really badly. I think, I don't know if you're similar, maybe a little bit. I will just avoid the task, put it off until the very last minute. And then unfortunately, myself and some of my friends have said this before, we are good at pulling things out of the bag in the last minute. And that leads to more dependence on doing that, which is just so unhealthy. Yes,
because that last minute stressor. And that's the thing. You will not, until that doesn't work, you will not change that. Because your brain is just trained. You're like, I constantly get away with doing things at the last minute.
Yeah.
And that is fine. And then that just becomes the way your body is used to working. I think that is really, really interesting. Going back to what you said there about like when you're going through lockdown, that you had that guilt. And that guilt, I think, comes back to what we were saying about our parents having this very definitive pathway to success that doesn't exist for us anymore because of external influences. It's incredibly difficult to unlearn that pathway doesn't lead to success.
Yeah.
Like, it is very difficult to sit down and train yourself and say, I've done the job. You know, I've done my leaving cert. I went to college. I got the job. I did whatever. I followed this path. I still don't own a house. And to be able to sit back and say, that's not my fault anymore.
Yeah.
It's not my fault because the world's changed and we've got a cost of living crisis and everything else. And it's not making excuses. It's to say that path was not foolproof and it has not worked for a generation of people.
Yeah.
And now for that path to be your path, you have to be the exception. You have to be the person who's earning, who's in a couple and you're both earning 90 grand to be able to live in Dublin or whatever it is. Like, that just doesn't work. And you very, because we've believed that for 30 plus years, that is where that guilt comes from, that we're sitting there going, we haven't done enough. I could be working harder. I could have a side hustle. I should be Instagram famous. I could be monetizing my TikTok. I should start a podcast. You know, you start to think like all these you know, I should have a craft business. You start thinking all these things because you're still committed to that linear path.
Mm.
And it's really, really difficult. But what I found was that when I stopped the drinking and stopped the kind of not unhealthy habits, but when I cleared space in my mind where I knew I was the healthiest I could be, those feelings and thoughts became like they not completely evaporated, but they became much clearer. And I can sit back and say, Jesus, I'm doing enough. Like, I am doing enough. I have tried. If this doesn't work, this is not a personal failure. This is a failure of the system that we're existing in.
Yeah.
And like, there comes a point in time that like you just have to I always say to you, surrender.
Release it. Like, just let it go. Release a little bit. We hold on so tightly, our generation. It's so like tightly, I don't know, we're so tightly wound and so let it go and realize that a lot of people have had incredibly good luck and a lot of business success is down to being in the right place at the right time and then being able to back it up with the work.
Yeah.
That's not to say that someone who has just not had any opportunity is not working equally as hard as that business person. And
that's what, you know, these we all have the same 24 hours in the day.
So false.
It's just so untrue. It's so untrue, because part of it is also privilege. Part of it is sitting down and being like, there are people who look like me, who sound like me, who are doing working the same amount of hours as me, who have had generational wealth and they're doing better.
Yeah.
And that's privilege.
Yeah.
Like, you have to just acknowledge, and then also I acknowledge my own privilege in being able to do what I have done this far.
Yeah.
But there comes a point in time where you do have to just we're like, I can't go any further because the world is fucking broken.
There was a time for me where I had had some career success and I did start to think I'm actually probably a little bit better than some people and a little bit smarter and work a little bit harder. And it rode that wave for a little while and kind of judged people. And now I've just come so full circle to where I know now, looking back with perspective, I had some really lucky breaks.
Well, I do think there is work and work paying off, but there is this thing called the Matthew effect.
You need the break first and then the work pays off.
Yeah, and like sometimes to get your foot in the door, you just need cold hard cash and other people don't have
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
You just need to like have something or the illusion of cash.
Yeah.
There's a thing called, I think it's called the Matthew effect, and it comes from the science community, and it's the idea that success compounds. So one win will lead to your next win. And you can see this because if you, in all the things that we do in the media, and for how stressful they are, they throw off these great award nights where they bring us all together and they give you an award for the best ad.
Those award nights are fantastic.
They are mean a lot. Fantastic, right? But
they're everything to me.
We've won.
You have traversed
up for my silver trophy
for a trophy that did not
exist. Right?
Exist and
some years they
back.
Do silver trophies and some years they don't. Okay, but the LinkedIn
so
post
you can't say it
same.
Doesn't mean a lot to you.
It does mean oh, stuff to me. Do you know what I mean? And I have piece of work I made won the Grand Prix 1 year.
I know that because I'm told once a week. Yeah.
So those lead to other opportunities because then you turn around and you're like, oh well, we're the silver best podcast in Ireland that year that we won it.
Silver best, yeah.
So the second best.
Yeah, we were
silver.
The best.
We were
came second.
Before Brunch is an award-winning podcast, we say.
And it was we're an independent podcast duo versus I think it was Carlsberg that won.
Yeah. We can now say, we're an award-winning podcast, which gives us more authority when we go in to pitch for things.
Yes.
And the likelihood that we're going to win more awards is higher because we've a proven track record. So success compounds. One win increases your likelihood to get another win. And it's across every industry. And I think you have to remember that as well, that like there are always people, I suppose this pyramid, the road up to that one top 1% gets narrower and narrower and narrower for a reason. Like it doesn't mean that people aren't working. People down here aren't working as hard as everyone else. It's just they get that break. They get that win. And the difference between that win and not getting that win is just the opinions of a small few people.
Yeah. Like an example that really draws that into relief is like people who grow up with their family homes in Dublin, and how they are so much better primed to then purchase in Dublin,
yeah,
because they've lived in their family home rent free, they get to save and they're back into the market themselves. Whereas if you're coming up from the country and paying rent for 10 yeah. years, you know, it's the barrier to entry is much higher. So again, money, location, success begets money and success. It's so true. And it can be really frustrating, but it can also be a real comfort because you can take the judgment off from yourself mm. when you're scrolling and you see other people's successes. I now am saying to myself, that was her lucky moment. She had the right idea at the right time.
Yeah.
She spoke to the right person in the right moment. Or her parents are in business and they taught her a lot about business growing up. I didn't have that. And, you know, we've all got different. Plus, by the way, privilege doesn't have to be money or being white, or it can be really good health.
Yeah, it can be access.
Yeah, like having, you know, stumbling across the right idea at an incredibly pertinent time. Like, luck has so much to do with it. And yes, having the work ethic to back it up is great too. Mm. But I, you know, everyone has a different road and a different journey, and it's not linear, and it's not I'm 33, so I should be here. This is an infinite game. Like, you might be winning today.
Yeah.
I've really learned over the course of my career that it isn't a straightforward trajectory. You can be winning today and you can be losing tomorrow, and it goes on infinitely. So be nice to everyone all the time.
I think we've come full circle from being the generation who grew up thinking that we are special and we each have a destiny that needs to be fulfilled, to realizing that nobody is special.
No.
That nobody is special. Nobody is working harder than anybody else. Of course, there are some people working harder, but
but it might not be paying off.
There are so many other variables at play that your success or lack of success, as you determine it, is not a failure of yourself. It can often be a failure of the system.
But I think it is your responsibility to assess the things that are causing you pain every single week and really do an audit of, okay, when I feel that way, why do I feel that way? What could be causing it? Get your health in order.
Yeah.
If you have the two key pillars of you're looking after your health and you're open to opportunity.
That's it.
I think then lay off yourself, because beyond that, you're driving your adrenals, you're in first gear constantly, you're fueling yourself with coffee, alcohol, stress, taking everything on board. Relax, focus on your health, which is very easy. We can all do that. We can all study what's healthy, what's not, and be open to opportunity. When that opportunity comes, if your health is in the right place, you'll probably be able to go and seize it with focus and energy.
You should do a self-help book, Megan.
I will write a self-help. Self-help books have formed me. I just love them.
I know you do.
One that I really wanted to recommend today that I read this year and has really helped me is called The Organized Mind by Daniel Levitin.
Okay.
And he really talks about how the mind works and how you can help it to work better, because it's an animal and you need to put some systems in place to help your mind to work according to your own touch points. And for me, his greatest tip is to go a lot slower about things. So when you're approaching a task, you don't need to have the answer right now, because we put pressure on ourselves to know the answer, to be perfect, to take it really slowly and allow yourself to think. Respond quickly, work slowly.
Okay, very good.
If someone now sends me a task to my email, I treat it like an absolute hot potato. If they've asked me to do something, I need to get it done straight. Go, go, go. Just get it done.
Yeah, that's a great way to work.
Get it done. Crap. Send them over a crap response, but get it sent over. And very often it won't be crap. It's this idea of, oh, she's asked me to do this, I need to do it absolutely perfectly, so I'm going to put some time aside tonight to do that. And then you don't, and then the next day it builds and it builds and it builds. You haven't responded and it's this big thing. If someone sends me, Megan, can you get a testimonial for this, can you do hot potato, get it done quickly.
Okay, very good.
But work slowly. If there's something you are working on, don't forget the power of focus, quiet time, no one talk to me. Work like a snail.
Yeah. And don't forget the importance of rest, that if you are rested, relaxed, the work will be better. My top tip for forming new habits and changing your way of thinking is CBT therapy.
Okay.
So I do mine with the Bloom app, which I know is promoted a lot across a lot of places. I found it really, really good. just the simple system of you catch, challenge and change a negative thought.
Brilliant.
So if you are getting stressed, really simple things, you know, if you are getting stressed about something, you try and catch the thought in the moment, you challenge why you're thinking like that, and then you can change it and it doesn't ruin your day.
Brilliant.
So you just immediately can deal with it in the moment. And it it's that whole idea that, you know, you've got 24 hours in the day. Don't let one bad minute or 10 bad minutes steal the rest of them. You know,
exactly.
That everything can be just contained and you can deal with it, change it and move on. And it's a really good way of changing your thinking. If you catch yourself thinking any negative thoughts, you know, I'd often think if you caught, like, you know, when we're filming and stuff like that, if I catch myself at a bad angle, I feel shite, and you can catch the thought, challenge it and be like, that's, no one's coming here to me to look at me. They're coming here to listen to my wisdom.
Yeah, it's good to catch it and challenge it. It's just that being aware of your thoughts is something that I never used to do.
Yeah.
Like, you just think your thoughts are part of you, but they're not.
No, it's learnings. It's previous learnings. And sometimes the best thing you can do is unlearn something.
Totally.
And get rid of it. Or, you know, your brain lies to you.
Yeah.
Your brain lies to you because there's hormones and everything at play. The classic case being that your brain will lie to you about wanting alcohol and needing a drink to relax, because that is dopamine. That is your brain seeking out dopamine and trying to convince you to give it dopamine. And when you do that thing or you understand the science, you will know that the greatest, you know, injection of dopamine you get is that first drink. And after that, it starts to deplete. So when you know that you will not get the buzz of the first drink from the second drink, you're like, it's impossible. It's scientifically impossible. Then the want for the second drink kind of goes away.
Like, that makes it so much less attractive to me.
Yeah.
Because then you're again challenging your belief over what your night of wine.
And that's
looks
how I started
like.
Doing initially, was only having one drink. So I was like, the second one
is
does
never
nothing.
As good.
It's never as good. So I'll have one.
Yeah.
I'll put my money back in my pocket and I'll know. And I forgot to mention the little thing that I teased last week was I did a hypnosis on. So I love meditating, as you well know.
Yeah.
And like, people are like, fuck off with your meditation. I find
meditation's great. And it's
I
so scientifically
it.
Backed.
I absolutely love it. I do it for sleep, everything. But one of the kind of deep meditative hypnosis is what I did. And it was about feeling comfortable in social situations to eliminate the want for a drink, but not to stop yourself from drinking entirely.
Okay.
So it was like just to put you at ease rather than going in. It's not like an addiction services kind of one. It's it's one that's more that helps you to feel comfortable in social scenarios.
Yeah.
And I thought it was brilliant. After listening to that for a really long time, I did not drink more than one drink in any social scenario I was in.
And do you now make it your business to go back and re-listen to that?
I will sometimes. I mean, at the moment I'm in a good headspace and I don't feel the need. Like, at the moment I really am really enjoying not drinking.
Yeah.
Like, really enjoying it. And I love telling people I don't drink now.
Yeah.
Love producing podcasts about it.
Yeah.
And I love just being better than everyone else. So that's my motivation.
Yeah.
No, I'm finding that I haven't been in that many scenarios recently where alcohol has been involved. But I'm really enjoying exploring, pushing myself in scenarios. Like, I'm going to a wedding tomorrow and I'm not drinking.
Amazing.
But I'm looking forward to that because it's going to be a gorgeous sunny day. And I also then will have all of Sunday.
But are you taking the time before you go to that wedding to plan out and plan for moments where you will really want one and how you'll react to that? Or are you just
I have my cues. So I have I will always order a lemonade.
Okay.
Like, because they always have, bars always have like a fancy lemonade, or like most restaurants will have like a nice soda or a nice lemonade that you can get.
Yeah.
Or I'll drink like a sugar-free drink.
Yeah.
You know, like a sugar drink, sugar-free fizzy or something. Because that's the thing. Yeah. When you're trying not to drink and then you go in and you just have like a normal alcohol-free drink.
Yeah.
It can get very, very
triggery.
Sugary and then you're not feeling good. So we'll always have one that doesn't have sugar in it. If you're going to drink a couple for the day or whatever. But I find a lemonade is a great, it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
It looks like a little, it can sometimes look like a little cocktail or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a nice little treat.
Okay. I don't find lemonade a treat, but I think you're onto something there. Like, don't go cold turkey without finding a replacement, like a tool.
And don't be afraid to ask bars and stuff now for an alcohol-free cocktail.
Yeah.
There's such a movement at the moment called Sober Curiosity. I don't know if you've seen it. And it's people who are like exploring life with less alcohol. And I find that bars and stuff have loads of alcohol-free options now. Really, really nice ones. Or, you know, don't be afraid to ask, find out what it is that you do enjoy in kind of an alcohol-free drink and ask for that at the bar. Like, do you have an alcohol-free gin and can I get that with whatever?
Yeah.
Your club, you know, Club Lemon or whatever like that. And it can be really nice. You just need to find your drink.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Like mine is just sparkling water and lime. I love that.
Yeah.
And then trying not to focus so much on my drink or what I'm consuming having to be the fun of the night. Like,
yeah.
That sounds so Pollyanna, but, you know, I did a wedding recently with no alcohol and my focus for the day was I kept, because I knew I was going to be really badly tempted at the dinner and afterwards. And I was like, when that happens, I'm going to think about the following morning, waking up. I was really visualizing it, feeling like my body really comfortable, like, you know, fresh, proud, like, I know that I'll have fun without the drink and going for a swim at the hotel. Like that was my focus because I would never go for a swim if I had been drinking the day before. And anytime during that day that I wanted a drink, I brought myself back to that moment of waking up, feeling fresh and going for a swim.
Yeah.
And I had to hold on to that. And it really worked.
But when you have that energy and that when you have the energy and also when you have that feeling that you have done the thing that you wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's not a smugness of not drinking, but it's like I set my mind to something and I did it.
You can trust yourself.
But that small little win sets you up for more wins during the week. And it sets you up for a much more productive, healthier, happier week in my experience.
Yeah.
And I just think it's worth putting out there because I think there are probably a lot of people who don't enjoy drinking in the way that they used to, but feel compelled to.
That is it, Cassie. That sums it up. Think about it. Do you actually enjoy drinking? Because that's the thing that you need to analyze. What does it mean to enjoy something? Do you enjoy drinking? Is it bringing you joy or is it taking more joy than it's bringing?
Yeah. The poison is not the antidote.
The poison is not the antidote.
So, yeah, if anyone out there is not drinking or was interested in having a non-drinking friend, don't be afraid to get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Write us a letter or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We've got something like 121
five-star reviews.
Five-star reviews. Leave us a little rating on Spotify.
That'd be gorge.
It helps other people discover the podcast because that's what the podcast apps like to see is engagement on them. So if you do like it, leave a review. If you don't, shut up.
Bye, Gen Zers.
Bye.